Hello, welcome to the Above Average Irrelevance podcast. Today is Wednesday, February 17th, and this is episode 2. I'm Matt Weaver, and I'm here with my partner in crime, Scott Nelson. Hi, Scott. How are you?
Good. How you doing?
I'm doing great. Almost over this cold. Can't wait for that day to come. So, let's dive right in. First thing I have on our agenda is Snapchat. And specifically, I wrote it as a question, am I too old to Snapchat?
Yes. Next.
I have a Snapchat account. I think I mentioned this to you the other day. And in general, despite the fact that I'm doing a podcast, in general, I'm fairly private person when it comes to social media. So this is an experiment to kind of learn what Snapchat is and how it works. And one of the unique barriers that I've run into is none of my friends who are of more or less the same age that I am have Snapchat accounts because it seems like it's what the teenagers do. And none of my 30-something-year-old friends have one of these accounts. So
you just created the account, or you created this account way back when you first heard about it and it has sat dormant?
No, I created the account a week ago.
Okay.
It's, you know, unless I start trying to find random strangers to send Snapchats to, which is not, it's not what I'm interested in at all. It's an interesting thing, but I don't know. Do you have any interest in Snapchat?
You know, usually when something gets a certain level of popularity like that, I try it, like create a Facebook account, create a Twitter account, create an Instagram account, and then I never use any of them because, right. No, I'm not really into broadcasting things. I'm not really into public, I don't know, distribution of my thoughts.
Despite doing a podcast.
This is your baby. You've... It's completely by force. No. So I don't know. And, you know, I read that article that was going around last week on BuzzFeed about Snapchatting, and I still don't get it. Like, I understand the concept of, you know, these quick, fleeting, ephemeral exchanges, but I don't get the point.
Maybe it's because you're too old.
I do not dispute that fact. No, but if I think even back to, I mean, you know, what's Facebook been around for now? Approaching 10 years. Like, I was younger when this whole social sharing thing started.
Yeah.
And I was not particularly interested in it.
Well, like me, you are a little bit of an introvert, so... You know, sharing the intimate details of your life every 37 seconds with the internet is not your default mode.
Yeah, and the interesting thing in that article was there's really no... I mean, the way the subject of the article is talking, she doesn't really even look at, like, what other people are saying or doing. It's really more like the act of Snapchatting, not really about the content of the Snapchats.
Right.
Did you gather that? Like, it's really, it's just about cranking through them. It's really more about the process than it is about the actual exchange.
Right.
Which I think is bizarre.
The act of interaction was the experience, not the content of the interaction.
Right. It's like if I had an app on my phone that popped up every hour and said, tap me, and then I had to tap it, and I tried to get a streak going, and then I got a trophy for it. Like, it's just, like, repetitive. I guess that's what
most
of social...
Maybe we should make that game.
Yeah, that's what most of social gaming is, right? Is it's just, like, repetitive motion.
Well, repetitive tapping or scrolling, yeah. Right? I mean, yeah.
So, I don't know. Maybe I should create an account. I'll create an account, so then you'll have one...
I'll have one Snapchat friend. Fair enough.
And then we can just... Snap like bosses on the podcast.
That's right. We can, you know, every half an hour we can send snaps of, hey, look, I'm still sitting in front of my computer.
maybe that's it. Maybe my life is so uninteresting that there's just nothing to tell anybody else.
Maybe you don't give yourself enough credit. How about that?
So what's your, are you going to give it a week? Are you going to try and find some Snapchat friends? What's going to happen in this experiment?
I'm going to try to rope a few people in and do it and see what happens. I'm not going to put an arbitrary time limit on it. So we'll keep trying. I feel like I need to try it and work at it enough until I can understand it. Like, I used to Twitter a lot. I don't Twitter very much anymore. I have a Twitter account. We've talked about my issues with the signal-to-noise ratio on Twitter changing since the early days. But I feel like I understand the concept of Twitter well enough that I'm good with that. I know what's there. I know what I'm missing. And I'm comfortable with that. I don't know about Snapchat. It feels like if the teenagers are there and it's really as popular as this article that we read is making us believe, maybe that's the next Facebook. Maybe this is what topples the dominance of Facebook in social media for the next generation.
It is interesting. I don't really know anything about Snapchat, and I think that's because my source of tech news is podcasts and, you know, tech news sites that are mainly populated by older people who are more into Twitter and more into other things.
Right.
So they never talk about Snapchat other than like the startup angle of, yeah, you know, buyout offers and VC funding and stuff like that. But the actual mechanics of the app, I don't think I've ever heard them discussed on a tech podcast.
Right. There was the Wall Street Journal, I think it was, somebody did a video for them maybe a month ago that talked about what Snapchat was and how it worked. Mm-hmm. You know, they did it as a Snapchat story, right, of videos and pictures. So anyway, it's the great experiment.
Okay, I will vow to create a Snapchat account before next we speak.
All right.
My other reluctance is I'm tired of creating accounts.
Yeah.
And then like abandoning them. I mean, I feel like I have literally hundreds of accounts spread across the internet that I have created, and they're just like,
my 1Password is full of the failed internet, right? I mean, it's, yeah, got, you know, you last accessed this account in 2014.
Right.
You know?
Mm. So it's going to be one more account I create and use for a week, and then there's no getting rid of ever. It doesn't matter, you know, I delete the app, remove it from 1Password, whatever. It's just knowing that it's out there, right, with my name on it.
Your digital garbage.
Exactly, exactly.
Hmm. All right.
But I'll do it.
Okay.
Maybe.
Let's move on to movies. I've seen a lot of movies since we last spoke. So first, let's start with Hail Caesar.
Yes.
We went and saw that on Monday.
Uh-huh.
I thought it was funny. I thought it was good.
I liked it.
If you like Coen Brothers movies, you're going to like this one. Because it's exactly what you would expect.
I agree. I mentioned this on Monday. I do like that I can get something different from the Coen Brothers from movie to movie. So this wasn't unlike past movies. I said I think it's a lot like Burn After Reading. It's kind of, mm-hmm, in that vein of, you know, manic character comedy,
yep,
movie that they make, which I do like, but they make different stuff too. You know, a movie like No Country for Old Men, a movie like Fargo,
sure,
kind of has a different dramatic sense to it. I feel like they show really great range in the work they do.
Yeah, this is definitely on the lighter fare. You know, nobody gets their body parts chopped off, as happens in some other movies.
Yeah, not a lot of violence in this movie.
Yeah,
even some of their funny movies have very violent moments.
Right.
But no, it was good, and it didn't try to accomplish a lot. It didn't try to be overly like complex. It was just kind of like an interesting self-contained story that right. I enjoyed very much.
Yeah, no, it's fun. It's almost, the movie is one of those things that cinema can do. You show up, you sit down in the dark theater, and you just kind of get transported to a different place and watch a story for 2 hours that's, you know, kind of funny and full of an interesting cast of characters, and you're just delighted and entertained. And then it's over, and you've enjoyed your time, and you file out.
Yeah, you don't have to think about it. You don't have to discuss it. You know, you don't have to, like, mull it over and decide if you like it or not. Yes, it was just a delightful movie.
Yes. So, Hail Caesar. I like
it. And great characters. You're always guaranteed great actors, great characters.
Yeah.
In a Coen Brothers film. And this did not disappoint. Clooney was not quite as crazy as we thought he was going to be based upon the ads. They had, like, a lot of Clooney crazy eyes, like, clips in the trailer.
Yep.
And then he was pretty, I mean, he was a very, like, actor, dramatic character, but he wasn't, like...
A little empty-headed.
Yeah. Not, like, manic crazy.
Yeah.
So, no, that was great.
So, I saw Star Wars again on over the weekend.
Which brings your total to?
6, I think.
All right. You got me beat.
And I like it. I still like it. Like, even after seeing it all these many times, I still like it, and I still see new things in it almost every time I see it. So, at some point, we should talk about what it is we think we know about this movie. Did you see the teaser trailer? Episode 8 is now in production?
No.
Whatever the next one is? Yeah. 8? 8.
Huh. Wow. They're really trying to ride the hype, huh?
Yeah. So.
Yeah. No, I need to see it again. I haven't seen it. You know, I saw it a lot in the first 2-3 weeks after it came out, and now I haven't seen it for a while. I'd like to go see it again. I haven't really even been paying attention. Is it still widely showing in theaters?
Yeah. I happened to be in Minneapolis over the weekend, and I was with some friends, and we decided kind of on a lark that we wanted to go see it. Flipped open my phone and found a theater that was going to show one, you know, on a Sunday afternoon, 90 minutes hence. So it's still showing all over the place. And the theater that we were in wasn't full by any means, but, you know, there were easily, you know, 40 or 50 people in the theater. So it's still...
Which you wouldn't expect for a movie that's been in the theaters for...
Ever.
2 months now.
Yeah.
Almost 2 months.
Yeah, so...
Huh. Still doing well.
Still doing well. Every time I see it, the surface story about the... You know, the giant laser planet blowing people up and the stupidity of all of that bothers me less and less. And I'm more and more interested in the lower level story about the interactions between the characters and what it means in the universe. Maybe I'm just too much of a Star Wars nerd, but
no, I think you've already gone through the phase of acceptance.
You've now, accepted the stupid, right. And now you're looking for the stupid.
Now you're looking for deeper details, right? Like you're analyzing all those little flashback type scenes and little bits of dialogue that are revealing something you didn't realize on the first 5 viewings.
Yeah,
I think that's it. You're just looking for something different now.
So we should have a Star Wars episode soon. All right, last movie, and I know you saw it. And I saw it yesterday, Deadpool. I have to admit, I laughed more and harder at Deadpool than I did at Hail Caesar. Maybe it was my inner 12-year-old coming out. But it was really funny. To me, anyway.
No, I'll agree. It was it's a much different kind of humor. It's like, I don't know, I don't want to be too judgmental, but... like a lower brow humor, right? That you have a more visceral reaction to.
Yep.
But no, I laughed a lot. I probably laughed more than Hail Caesar too. It's very funny.
it's a the fact that it breaks the fourth wall on purpose, and it doesn't take itself too seriously is part of what makes it so engaging. I suppose the movie is still pretty new, so maybe we shouldn't talk too much about it and give a bunch of spoilers to a bunch of people. Assuming, of course, there's a bunch of people listening to this podcast. So,
okay, I'll just let that go.
Yeah.
No, I agree. I thought it was really interesting, aside from the breaking the fourth wall, so like that cinematic technique, they also did a lot of like self-referential humor and yep. like present day references, you know, like timely mm-hmm. Outside of the Marvel world and into our world references to even right. like particular actors. And like, I thought that was really interesting. That's something I haven't seen done in a big blockbuster type movie before.
Yeah.
Right. Is to be that like, I don't know, self-deprecating and that like referential.
Well, there's clearly some pretty hardcore violence in the movie, and it would be a serious downer if it didn't make light of itself constantly. So I thought it was fun. If you like comic book movies, you like it. I like that it wore its R rating on its sleeve. So, I won't say eloquently, but so forcefully, right? I didn't count, but it wouldn't surprise me if they used the F word more than 100 times in that movie, just because they could.
So speaking of the R rating, the viewing I went to was on like a Sunday afternoon, and there were, I don't know, maybe 8 or 10 children like under the age of 12 in the theater. And I found that to be disturbing.
Yes. It's not appropriate for kids.
And then there was this thing going around Facebook that I saw yesterday where somebody had posted kind of lamenting that they took their like 12-year-old to the movie. And in the first like 5 minutes, they left. And they made some statement like they wish, you know, that there would have been some sort of heads up given to parents, you know, that
it's rated R.
It's not that kind of movie. And then the first comment was like, oh, you mean like an R rating? Yes. And I think, you know, all families are different. All parents are different. I think people have kind of become desensitized to what the R rating means. Because there are a lot of movies that are rated R for a couple choice swear words and some violence, you know, that maybe that's okay for kids. This one was not. This is not a kid's movie.
No, it has an R rating for a reason. So
I don't know. I will honestly say, like, at the outset of the movie, that was in my mind. It's like, as what's going on screen is happening, I'm like, oh, these little kids are seeing and hearing this. Like,
so that was almost kind of ruining the experience for you.
It does. And that's just me, you know, I guess. But I think it's disruptive to other people in the theater.
Sure. Well, it damages your suspension of disbelief.
Yeah, watching Deadpool surrounded by a bunch of kids. Exactly. Yeah. It's kind of like if you watch a really off-color movie with your parents kind of thing.
Yes, I suppose that's true. Any movies coming up that you want to go see?
Boy, I haven't been paying very close attention. I'm still trying to see some of the Oscar movies, but I've missed my opportunity on most of those, I think. So, like Hail Caesar and Deadpool were the two on my list. They're checked off now. What do you got on the horizon?
That's out right now. You know, not a lot, I guess.
Did you ever see 13 Hours?
No.
I guess I saw that
last week. I do kind of want to see that one. I don't think my girlfriend's going to want to go to that. So,
I really enjoyed that. Yeah. It's a really intense movie.
Yeah.
It's one of those that it's almost a little traumatic to watch it.
I kind of want to go see Zoolander 2, but the initial reviews haven't been so great. So
yeah,
I'll probably still go. But it's hard to strike gold twice, I guess.
So I will see that just because of my love for Zoolander. But I don't have high expectations.
You know, I suppose maybe The Finest Hours. I don't know. Have you seen that one?
No. You know, I was excited to see that, and it has come out with so little fanfare that I'm sure it's not great. So now I'm less excited to see it.
Yeah. We did go see Pride and Prejudice and Zombies.
I hope somebody drug you to that movie.
I knew that she would want to go, so we went. It is more of an action movie than you might think for something that has supposedly at its base a Jane Austen novel.
So, okay.
I had a good time. I had low expectations, and they were exceeded. So it wasn't as bad as you might think it could have been. But that's about it. Nothing else for you on the movie front.
Nope. Got some good TV back on. Walking Dead started back up Sunday. Huh? I know you watched that or have watched that, but do you watch it in real time?
No, I watch it on Netflix, which means there should be another season showing up for me soon, right? Aren't they about a season behind?
So the interesting thing is, on Netflix, I think they wait until the complete season. Walking Dead does one of those deals where they have kind of two, they split the season. Mm-hmm. I think it's like 6 and 6 episodes. But I bet they don't put it on Netflix until the whole season has completed. So I'm going to bet that you have last season and you won't get this season until like this summer.
Could be. I'm caught up with what's on Netflix. I'm trying to remember where they cliffhangered. Oh, they were at the last thing I saw on Netflix was they had arrived at the community on the East Coast that had the walls and
stuff. Alexandria.
Had running water and stuff, right? And
yeah, so that was last season.
Right, and so they were, you know, our heroes were hardened from their time with the zombies, and the people in Alexandria were soft and squishy. And so that was the conflict until the end when they too learned of the necessity of being resilient against the plight of the zombies and the evil people in the world. So, yeah.
And that show's still good. I feel it's been consistently good for the last couple of seasons.
Aren't they at the end? Have they announced the end? Maybe I'm thinking of some other show.
No, The Walking Dead is
still going strong.
It's one of those indefinite type deals. We're going to cash in while we can kind of things.
I hope they don't go one season too far.
I'm sure they will.
Yeah. But, yeah. What other good TVs coming out?
So I just finished Making a Murderer.
Oh, yeah.
Have you watched that?
No, that's a Netflix original.
Yeah, right? I don't really want to talk about it. Like, okay. There's been too much discussion of Making a Murderer. But what happened here is, so, you know, a lot of people in my gym were talking about it. I was seeing it online and stuff, and I was like, I must watch this. And so here, maybe a month ago on a Friday night, I started watching it, and I watched like the first two episodes straight through. And I said to myself, no, this is like, it's like trashy true crime TV. Yep. It's like, I can't waste. It's 10 episodes. It's 10 hours. It's like, I cannot waste 10 hours of my life binge watching this show.
Okay.
So I decided I wasn't going to watch any more of it unless I was rowing. I have like an ERG rowing machine.
Yeah. Okay.
I wasn't going to watch any more of it unless I was rowing while I watched it. So then it's taken me another month to finish the other 8 episodes, but I've rowed like 80,000 meters while watching the show.
Okay.
And that was good because it's a good kind of show to watch while you exercise because it isn't high drama. I mean, I wouldn't want to watch The Wire while I row.
Right.
You don't want something that you really have to pay attention to and think about, but this, I can just kind of keep my eyes on it and, you know, hear what's going on. And It's a show more that you can listen to. Like, the visuals aren't particularly compelling.
Right.
You're just getting the story through the interviews and stuff. So I finished that last week.
Yeah.
Now I need to come up with a new show that isn't worthy of binge watching directly, but
well,
should
you could,
make myself row while I do it.
You could do the Serial podcast.
I have been. I actually have been listening to that. I think I'm caught up on the current season.
So you, because that would be a similar type of show.
Yeah, you know, I don't really like listening to podcasts while I exercise.
Why not?
I feel like my mind kind of wanders, and I realize that I haven't been listening. There's something about the visual of watching TV that keeps me in the story. Yeah. So, like, I've tried podcasts before while I jog or I row, and it doesn't really work. I usually do music, but I found that TV works.
I do podcasts while I run, and I find that works better for me than music. So.
That's what I would think. You know, I would think it would pass the time faster.
Yeah.
Right? Because you could listen to an hour podcast, you stay focused on it, pretty soon you've been jogging for an hour kind of deal. But
right.
I spend a lot of time, like, backing up because I've lost track of where I am or what's being said.
So.
Doesn't work. I don't know.
Well, different strokes, different folks.
Yeah.
Speaking of working out, you've now had your fancy new Garmin watch for a little more than a week now. So give us an update.
So far, so good. I love it. I'm going to keep it. I'm not going to go back to the Pebble yet. It has a few kind of weird behaviors. I ran outside with it yesterday.
Yeah.
The GPS is really nice. Having accurate pace data. It's really nice. Not dragging my big ass phone along is really nice. It has kind of a weird, the notifications thing I think I mentioned last week are a little wonky, and it made me wonder whether I manage notifications incorrectly, because what it does is, okay, so it'll say here, you know, 23 messages. And what that means is it's keeping track of any notifications I've gotten to my phone that I haven't explicitly cleared.
Cleared on the watch or on the phone?
On the phone. So my traditional behavior with notifications is they pop up on the screen, you know, I'll touch ID, go in, unlock the phone, do what I'm doing, but I never actually clear the notification because, you know, it disappears from your lock screen the first time you enter your phone. So I might, you know, swipe down, go into notifications, and there's like 50 notifications in there because I never really clear them.
You mean the pull down from the top?
Yeah. Do you go in and do you explicitly clear notifications?
No, I don't have that kind of time.
No. So, but now if I want my TB to zero messages, like if I want all the notifications deleted from my watch, I have to go in and explicitly like clear notifications from Notification Center.
No.
I think that's am I right? That's an odd behavior. Do people actively manage notifications?
I've never seen anyone do so.
So I think that's something, the way the Pebble worked, just like unlocking my phone so the notification disappearing from the lock screen was clearing it and the Pebble would forget about it.
Yeah.
And that's how it should be.
Right.
So I think Garmin is kind of, I don't know how those APIs work. I don't know. But I think they've kind of misinterpreted how notification tracking should work.
I wonder if there is a configuration for the Garmin.
I don't think so. I kind of dug into that. It's really just like an on or off thing.
Huh.
So that bugs me a little bit. But if that's the worst problem with this, then I can deal with it. I've already changed my behavior that, you know, once a day now I go in and like clear all my notifications.
Sure.
Just to zero out what's on the watch.
You're being trained by the watch.
Basically.
That would drive me insane.
So I've worn it a couple times now doing like CrossFit type workouts to track my heart rate, which I hadn't done before. That's fun. I like to manage the intensity of my workout based on my heart rate.
So to do the heart rate, though, you're wearing the chest strap, which your watch is connected to.
Yes. And I actually just ordered a new chest strap because the one I currently have is from a previous Garmin watch. Like this watch didn't come with RA monitor. I'm using a chest strap that I already had from an old Forerunner.
Right.
And Garmin used to have these chest straps that have a long, hard plastic strip that runs across the entire front of your chest. And it's not super comfortable. And the elastic has kind of started to degrade in it. And that plastic strip is heavy enough that, like, when jogging, it just starts to slide down. So I ordered a new one. Now they have a style that's more like a polar style, if you're familiar with that, where it just has a small node, like in the middle of your chest.
Oh, okay.
So it's a lot lighter.
And I have an old polar chest strap, but it's the long, hard plastic one.
Yeah.
So
I'm hoping that new style will be better. Like when you're doing an active workout, the old Garmin style is not super conducive to comfort.
In the middle of last week, I got really sick again. That's two illnesses this winter season, which is more than I care for. It was bad enough that I missed a day of going to the gym, and then the next day I went to the gym. I went because I was going stir crazy, but I had no energy, and my workout wasn't very good. I mean, I went and I felt better for having gone, but being ill like that and not having a lot of energy to try to have a good workout, I mean, it really kind of knocks you back, right? Not only are you sick and trying to recover, but then you're having, several days in a row of missed or very poor workouts. It kind of pushes you back even farther to whatever your fitness goals are. It's disheartening. I mean, it's a setback. I don't know. How do you deal with that?
I never get sick. Okay, I actually don't get sick a lot, and so when I do, I'm like the worst sick person ever. Like I feel like I'm like my life is over and I'm gonna die. No, that is hard. Because I am a believer in not working out when you're sick.
Yeah.
Because when I'm at the gym and people come who are sick, I'm like, go home. You're going to get me sick.
Right.
Because in a gym, you're touching things and
you're breathing
your body. Yeah, your bodily fluids are, getting on the equipment, and like, you don't go to a gym when you're sick, right? It's like one of the worst places to spread disease. But aside from that, I mean, I think a lot of people, even when they're not necessarily contagious, come work out when they're sick. And I think your body is working very hard to repair itself, and there's no reason to add extra stress to your immune system.
So the first day I went back, it had been long enough. I wasn't contagious anymore. I didn't have a lot of energy, but when I was done with my workout and I was taking a shower and walking out of the gym, I felt better. I felt better then than I had felt all day, right? The workout, even as, kind of low key as it had been, felt good to me. Like, it felt like it was the right thing to do. Now I went home and drank a glass of water and had a little bit of food and was lazy the rest of the day, right, to try to recover. But having gone and done the workout felt like the right thing to do. But you would advocate.
Well, I think you're right. I think it's an intensity thing. Like, I think, even when I have a rest day, I tend to have an active rest day. Like, I'll do a recovery row or, do a lot of walking, things that are not, particularly intense. So I think there's some good in that.
Yeah.
But as far as looking to make gains or do any sort of strength training when you're sick, no.
No. It's more about just
moving.
Going in there and doing something.
Yeah. I mean, especially if you're having like sinus, head cold type trouble, just like getting up and moving around can help relieve some of that. But I know what you mean. I mean, it's, you actually like are losing progress if you go a week, 2 weeks without doing any strength training, you know, if you've been building to something. So that's kind of hard to take.
Well, and for me, there's the habit of going to the gym, and too many days of not doing it damages the habit. And so I feel like I have to protect it, right? It's like a little, it's a little fire of habit burning, you know, go to the gym, work out, be stronger, be better, do whatever, right? And every day you don't tend to that little flame, yeah. It's going to go out, and then I'm going to go back to being my fat, lazy slob self again, which is not what I want.
Well, yeah. And, you know, eating too, I don't know, a lot of people when they're sick, even like with a cold and stuff, you know, they don't eat. That is not true for me. When I'm sick, I like feel like, well, I get to eat ice cream all the time because I don't feel good.
You know? That's right.
So I tend to like not exercise and eat ice cream and macaroni and cheese and crap that I normally wouldn't or would try not to eat. Yeah. But then your resolve is so low because I feel so sorry for myself. So
I generally don't eat. I lost 4 pounds.
Well, so that's good, right?
I gained it all back yesterday. Yesterday is a bad day, but we won't talk about that.
Yeah, that's tough. Get healthy.
Yeah. I'm better. I maybe don't sound better. I feel a lot better.
Good.
I was doing no sweets, no alcohol in January, and you were as well, but for a different reason, right? You're on the whole life challenge, right?
Yeah, I'm doing this eating challenge. I mean, the no booze was kind of in solidarity with you.
Right. I did no booze in January, and I almost did the whole month without drinking anything. I wasn't perfect, but pretty good. Now that it's February and I can drink again, I have had some drinks, and some of it has been good. Like, we've gone out to one of our, you know, favorite watering holes, the Thirsty Belgian, and had a couple of really good beers. And those are good. Those have seemed worth it. Like, they're worth getting to the bottom of the glass. But I've been in some other social situations where drinking was the acceptable thing to do. And it wasn't bad beer. It just wasn't great beer. And so you have a couple beers, but you're like, man, I think I might have just rather have had a glass of water. I find that to be, I want to say bizarre, but it's not really bizarre. I find that I maybe have a new or a slightly different perspective on it. Like, if I'm going to choose to have a drink, it should be genuinely good. And having another Coors Light in a social situation has no purpose anymore. I don't know if I'll be able to maintain that perspective once I get far enough away from having spent, you know, a month not drinking, but it's the most surprising thing to me coming out of spending a month choosing not to have any alcohol.
I think that's a good outcome. I think that's something that dieting or abstaining from something in general can do for you, is you realize the difference between like a worthy cheat. I use the word cheat lightly, but, you know, a worthy indulgence and, you know, just going for every indulgence that presents itself, you know?
Yeah. You're still...
So this challenge I'm doing is an 8-week thing, and I'm like 5 weeks in now.
Yeah.
And I'm getting a little stir crazy. Like you said, we had a few beers Monday night, had some popcorn. And so the way this challenge works is there's points attached to good behaviors. So if you drink your water and you do your workout and you don't eat bad food, you get points, and then you go in and log your score every day and stuff. So there is some latitude to, you know, cheat or do what you want. You just lose your points.
Right.
And at the end of the challenge, you can your success basically is directly correlated with how many points you've lost for all the, you know, bad things you've eaten and bad behavior during the challenge. So
yeah,
it's good. I mean, something like this is good for me to recenter and do exactly what you're talking about. Like to start to be, to more carefully choose, what's worth it. What's a worthy cheat.
Yeah. Now you've done this Whole Life Food Challenge before. Last time you came out of it, did you have a different perspective on any one thing, either booze or a particular kind of food?
Yeah. You know, the last one I did ended right near kind of like the middle of November. So it was right before
going into
the holiday season.
Right.
So I didn't come off of the last challenge so well. Let's put it that way. And it took halfway into this challenge to get my weight back to where it was at the end of the last challenge.
Yeah.
So obviously I learned nothing. No matter what I learn, there's nothing to be done about turkey and dressing and sugar cookies and pecan pie. And
my guess is there are a lot of people who would be happy to have in the middle of February a pre-Thanksgiving weight again. I think you're probably ahead of the game for many people.
True.
So,
but I've been doing like a paleo style diet for a couple of years now, and I guess a couple of key things is I just don't eat pasta ever.
Yeah,
I don't eat bread. I don't buy bread ever. My parents were visiting me here maybe 6 months ago, and we were talking about what to have for breakfast, and they generally have toast.
Sure.
And I was like, well, we could have toast, but I'll have to go buy bread and a toaster. Because I finally got rid of my toaster because I hadn't made toast in 2 years.
And as you can see, I've got a toaster sitting out on the counter right over there.
Yeah, it looks like it was recently used.
Yeah.
So, I mean, those are kind of permanent behavior changes that I've made. And I don't have regrets or I don't miss those foods.
Cool.
So.
All right. We'll have to... I'll be interested after you finish this challenge and then get a couple weeks past it. I'm going to ask you this question again and see if anything's come out at you.
Oh, now there's pressure though. So now you've already changed what the behavior will be because, there's something to be said for that. That's one thing I know about myself. I do better with accountability or with some form of external accountability.
Right.
I have a hard time getting motivated to achieve fitness, nutrition type goals myself. But if I'm doing some kind of a challenge, something that's publicly visible, something I'm doing with someone else, you know, I'm going in and working out for a coach or a trainer, higher success rate.
Having the trainer has been very important to me in starting again this going to the gym habit that I have now. So I understand that. All right. The last thing I wanted to talk about today was having some sort of status board or like personal accountability metric. I mentioned here, Panic has this app for iPads called Status Board 2, which allows you to create on your iPad a status board of whatever you want. I've thought about maybe using that to have relevant sort of life data on it. And that would be some fitness-related data, either something as simple as tracking the number of steps a day or some sort of exercise metric. Maybe that stuff, maybe also coupled with some financial data, right? To just like keeping track of your fitness data, keeping track of your financial data can be a great motivator for buying less silly stuff and spending your money more wisely. I don't know. I think you've been thinking about something similar.
Yeah, I would like to do something with my fitness data. We talked about how, you know, I kind of like to log all my workouts, I've been logging calories, log my fitness stuff, but then there's really no good way to visualize it. And all these different apps and devices I use don't communicate with each other particularly well.
No.
So I was thinking around the ideas of something for the web that would pull the various data using APIs and consolidate it into some sort of dashboard, you know, with widgets of like weight and, you know, fitness tracking, stuff like that. But
the thing that I want, though, is not to have to seek it out. I want it to be in my face without me having to look at it, because I'll forget.
Right.
I mean, I may go to the same, you know, if I did that on the web, I might go to that web page twice a day, every day for 2 weeks, and then just like Dory from Finding Nemo, I'd totally forget about it. I'd never look at it again, you know. But if it was something, if I had an old iPad that I didn't use for anything else anymore, and I just set that somewhere where I was going to see it 14 times a day, every day, and I couldn't help but see it, I think I would get the maximum benefit from it that way.
I guess so, yeah. I mean, that's another, like, accountability factor, right?
Yeah.
It's in your face every day.
Right.
I think some of it, though, what would be motivating to me is if you were seeing things that you could affect. So when you talk about like financial situation, maybe there's a moving line of like your spending rate.
Yep.
And by not spending money today, I see it start to move down. And then if I don't spend any money the following day, it moves down. You know, like I can affect the trend. That's what I would need if it was going to somehow, you know, I think benefit me to see it right in front of me every day.
Yep.
That's why a step count is interesting, right? Like I'm seeing my step count. I want that number to go up.
Yeah, absolutely.
Take a few steps, you know? It's right. Like you have immediate impact on improving that metric.
Right.
I think if you found a lot of things like that to start showing that it was like, I can work on this today.
Yep.
That would be a really interesting thing.
Yeah. So that might be a fun kind of side project to work on.
Dashboards in general, you know, a couple of years ago, that was a really big thing, right? Like dashboards all over, all these startup companies were starting to build dashboard software and, you know, pull in all your data sources and your analytics and get it on a dashboard and get it on the wall. And I'm sure all of that's still happening, but I don't hear people talking about it anymore. So is it, maybe it's like either it's a solved problem or it's not as interesting as everybody thought it was going to be.
Well, there's maybe a little bit of both. And what you have discovered is fitness data, all of these companies feel like the data is the most valuable thing, which they're probably not wrong, but they want to hoard it. They don't want to let you get to that data, right? You and I have complained to each other more than once about, I'm happy for Apple's HealthKit to be the grand repository for all of that stuff, but I don't want to have to go through a bunch of intermediate steps to get, you know, the Withing scale to put the data in there. Mm-hmm. I just want to step on the scale and have it instantly be there. And I don't want to have to punch a bunch of buttons on my phone every day to make it happen.
Right.
I just want it to work. Darn it. Just work.
And it won't. It won't do it. I have learned that. But I can have Withings give my weight to my Fitness Pal, and then my Fitness Pal will happily put it in Apple Health.
Yeah, that's...
But why did I need a middleman to get my weight into Apple Health?
Yeah, that's stupid, right? So that's a dashboard problem, fundamentally.
Yeah.
Well, there's always hope for the future.
Yeah, get something set up and put it on the table here next week, and we can watch your stats.
Anything else you want to talk about?
No, I'm good. I'm out of coffee.
Well,
let's wrap it up.
With that, it's time to wrap it up. All right, this has been episode 2. We'll talk to you next week.
See ya.